My name is Jim. This is Jim Warfare, the Battle of Ideas. David Parker, Dawn Lester, or should I say Dawn Lester and David Parker, because ladies first. Thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you for having us. Pleasure to be here.
Yes, thank you for inviting us. It's good to be here.
We chatted a few days ago on TNT, and I'd like to chat about pretty much the same stuff again. But of course, we have more freedom now. We've got more time, etc. And it's such a big topic, but it's so important, isn't it, about what causes illness?
Absolutely. Yes, definitely is. Because it's one of those things that's, well, not only imprisoned people in a false health paradigm for, well, at least the last 150 years, but it's being used now as a weapon with the whole COVID thing. They're using the falsification of the, or should I say the false paradigm of the germ theory, as a weapon to keep people in fear and to basically force them into taking experimental, well, they're not vaccines, they don't come under that official category, but to take these jabs, we'll call them that, which are experimental, even admitted by the pharmaceutical companies that have produced them, Pfizer, etc. And they are extremely dangerous, and many people have already died because of them. And this is reported in official terms. It's not just something that the fringe, shall we say, are talking about. This is official. You know, in the UK, we have official records, government records, that show how many thousands of people have died as direct results of these jabs. So, yes, health is very important at the moment. It always was, but even more so now, because it is being used as a weapon to harm the population of the world. So that's why we do what we do, and not only in our interviews like this, but in our tours of the UK, and because we've recently just come back from Scotland, where we're doing some interviews up there live. These are live talks that we do. And so we know the urgency of it and the interest that people have to learn more.
I would love to go to Scotland. I haven't been there. My wife has.
It's a lovely place. And the Scottish people were lovely. They were very welcoming. And we can't wait to get back there, actually, where there are some people who are setting up more talks for us up in Scotland. So we look forward to being out. It's quite a long way from where we are. It takes us about 7 hours to drive there. So it's quite a long way to go. But we are looking forward to going back in the near future. Yeah.
How have you found people responding to your type of arguments? I mean, they are fairly counter-narrative.
Yeah, I mean, some people already know about our work. I mean, there's really quite a range. You know, some people already, you know, have the book, know about our work and you know, what we talk about, and quite happy with that, the concept. Some are, you know, have started looking into this, and others are, you know, sort of more unsure about it all. So we get, you know, sort of a mixed crowd. It's not always, you know, preaching to the choir, which is good, because obviously, you know, we do want to help other people understand what's going on. And so, you know, understanding that there's no such thing as a pathogenic virus, you know, that's the core message, because it's not just, you know, COVID, it's all the other nonsense they're trying to scare people with. So we, you know, we get sort of a mixed crowd, but usually very supportive, interested, enthusiastic. You know, occasionally a few people have some difficult sort of have a difficult time kind of getting the concept across, you know, because they just, maybe because of their background and their careers and they're scientists, so they have a little bit of a problem trying to come out of that paradigm because of their training. But doesn't change the message,
which is most doctors, of course. But we're very pleased to see that more and more doctors, MDs, that is, medical doctors, are actually coming out of the profession. I hesitate to call it that. It's caused a lot of damage. But there's more and more, and some of them have become quite well known. I'm thinking like Dr. Andy Kaufman and Dr. Tom Cowan and the Baileys, both Samantha and Mark, and obviously Dr. Stefan Lanker. So there's many more doctors that have become very well known on the internet who are confirming what we are saying, which helps people as well, because we don't come from a medical background. We, you know, I'm a retired electrical engineer, and Onze was an accountant. But so we don't come from the medical establishment. So sometimes people find that as a problem. But as we explain to people, you know, anyone can study a subject and learn it. In the same way I had to study electrical engineering for 5 or 6 years, and doctors study the medical system for 5 or 6 years. And we studied the medical system for 10 years while we were writing our book. So, you know, if you apply yourself, if you have the intellect, you know, and you have the determination, and you don't take no for an answer, and you follow the evidence, which is the most important thing. But unfortunately, science has drifted into an area where they're not following the evidence. They're just following dogma and close shop on anyone who said, well, I've got a new idea here. Would you like to look at this? And of course, they don't want to. And we come across those people, you know, who call themselves scientists but don't act in a scientific way, and call themselves doctors, but have no argument to refute what we're saying, i.e. that the germ theory is unproven scientifically, and there's no such thing, as Dawn said, as a pathogenic item, whether it's a bacterium or a virus. You know, people often forget that the same rules apply to bacterium as well, and if you can't prove that it actually causes an illness, then you should stop saying it. So the germ theory is really quite defunct, and we spent 10 years looking at that. But those doctors have no way to refute what we say, so then they just revert to insults, you know, and call us insane or something like that, which is not scientific at all, is it? And just shows that they have nothing to say, but everything to lose, and that's the problem. But this is, as you said right at the beginning, this is the crux of it. It's the crux of why the pharmaceutical companies don't make people well, and in fact cause harm. And doctors, in their training, because we studied how they were trained, are trained to be basically salesmen for the pharmaceutical companies. And it may sound like a harsh thing to say, but basically that's it. They don't know anything else because that's how they're trained. And virologists are the same. They're trained in procedures which are not scientific and are relatively easy to disprove. But of course, in each case, whether it's a doctor or a virologist, they have vested interest in sticking to what they've been taught. I mean, it's their jobs that are at stake, and their reputations. And so you can see why they don't take kindly to anyone, whether it's us or a Dr. Andy Kaufman or Tom Cowan, come along and say, well, sorry, guys, but we found that what we've been trained to do is completely wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a hard, forgive the pun, that's a bitter pill to swallow.
Speaking of what really makes you ill, I hope you'll forgive me, but I'm drinking Jack Daniels, and I know that that probably makes me ill.
Well, it can make you feel good. I mean, we're not Puritans. I mean, I like a nice single malt myself, or a bourbon or something. So, no, I don't sort of drink it every day. But you know, of course, alcohol, you cannot class it as a healthy food, that's for sure. So we'd make no bones about that. But, you know, as I say, we're not puritanical and say, oh, no, you can't do that. And the only thing we do, as we make no secret of, Dawn and I are both plant-based, so yes. we don't eat animals or fish or anything like that, because we found that to be a very healthy diet. And because the ethics of it, because we feel as human beings we're responsible for looking after life, not only of people but of all creatures, including plant life, as regards trees and the, you know, but we have to live on something, and so we've not developed how to live on fresh air and nothing else. So we have to eat We have to eat something. Well,
for what it's worth, whiskey is plant-based.
Well, yes, and so is wine, of course. It's made from grapes, isn't it? And that's quite a nice drink too.
Well, that sounds healthy to me.
Yeah, well, it's probably more healthy than Jack Daniels, but but no, we all joking apart. I mean, if you live a generally healthy lifestyle with what you eat and what you do, you can drink Jack Daniels, you know, in moderation, and it's not going to make you ill, unless you drink it to excess, of course, which some people do and have to suffer the consequences.
You know, it's funny. Before we go any further, I've got a comment here from from Norman, who's watching, and he says he's been having heated debates with his recently retired doctor father for many years now. And it's interesting because you were just saying that it's about a paradigm shift. It doesn't mean that doctors are all stupid or evil or buying into some system. They simply haven't thought about the paradigm shift. Is it? Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's a question of their training. I mean, you know, they spend years training and learning about a particular way of treating patients, a particular understanding of the reasons that people get ill, and they learn all these names about different diseases, and they're not actually taught about health. You know, they're only taught about how to treat, manage disease, and how to identify and diagnose them. So they've spent years learning about all these different conditions and thinking that they're different diseases. And so it's very difficult for them to realize that it is a paradigm shift to say, well, there aren't different diseases, which I know will be a shock to people as well. You know, there are just different symptoms that people experience, and different sets of symptoms and symptom complexes, whatever way people want to describe them, but they're not different conditions. They're not things that we get, you know, then we don't catch these diseases. We just have conditions within the body that produce symptoms, and that's because it's the body that heals itself. And that, of course, is a big paradigm shift, because it takes the power back to the people to be able to look after their own health, to take responsibility for what they put in and on their body. And of course, that means they then don't go to the doctor, and therefore they're not support, you know, the whole pharmaceutical industry is somewhat defunct at that point. So really, you know, that's quite a big deal. So it is a huge paradigm shift.
And when you consider that doctors, as I said earlier, we had to talk to doctors and inquire into how they were trained at medical school. And as we found out, you know, the curriculums in medical schools are largely set by the pharmaceutical companies, and the curriculum is largely set by pharmaceutical companies, and the college library is stocked by pharmaceutical companies, and many of the lecturers are employed by pharmaceutical companies. And that's why I said doctors are trained really to be salesmen for the drug companies. You know, where in their training they don't get to do any research. They are just fed lots of information. So basically, in simple terms, they're told this bacterium causes that disease, this virus causes that disease, and these are the drugs that you administer for those things. And they don't get to question that. That's just accepted as gospel. And I'm sure your listeners' dad, if he was honest enough, will admit that's it. They don't get to say, well, where are the scientific papers that prove this virus has been isolated, fully genetically characterized, and proved to cause the said disease? They don't get to ask those questions. They don't get to see those papers, mainly because they don't exist, of course, as we found out in our 10 years of research. And no one else has been able to find any scientific paper that proves categorically that either a bacterium or a virus has ever been proven to cause whatever disease is attributed to it. And that's the crux of it all. There is no scientific backup for the dogma, and that's all it is, that's promulgated at medical college. And we found the same with virology. They're taught a methodology of what is supposed to be isolation of a virus, And, you know, we've looked at that very carefully. We've discussed it with doctors, in particular, Dr. Stefan Lenker, who was trained as a virologist. So he knows very well what they do. And it's just a faulty methodology dating back to 1954. And with Enders and Peebles, you know, you probably can still get hold of the original paper when they were trying to prove that a virus caused measles, which they were unsuccessful in doing. But at least in their paper, they admitted that there could be other reasons for why the cells in their petri dish all died, and that the reasons could be something other than a virus. Now, at least they admitted that in their paper, but virologists today, well, right from then up till now, so what, roughly 70 years, have been doing the same test, which is a faulty test. It doesn't prove anything. And as Dr. Stefan Lenker pointed out, none of them ever do a control experiment to see if they could get the same results without any viral material being present in the petri dish. And he's proved this. He's demonstrated it. He's published it to show that you get exactly the same results because the cells in the petri dish, usually nearly always monkey kidney cells and bovine serum, which is blood from a baby calf, those are the cells that are in the dish, and they will die if you, without any viral material being put into the dish, if you leave it for the said up to 5 days, which virologists do, the cells die because they've been poisoned and starved because of the experiment that they do. So it doesn't require any so-called viral material to be in the petri dish. And that's the control experiment to show you get exactly the same result. So as Dr. Stefan Lenker said, you know, what virologists do and have been doing for the last 70 years, they disprove themselves because they have never, ever been able to truly isolate a so-called virus and genetically characterize it and prove that it causes a disease. So even to the point where they claim to have done that, but as we've seen, their cocktail in a petri dish, they call an isolation. So they confuse the public when they say, we have isolated it.
Mm.
But when they say isolated it, no, it's a cocktail of about five or more different components in their petri dish. Well, that's not an isolation, is it? You know, an isolation is when you separate one thing from everything else, and virologists don't do that. So they can't prove ever that a so-called virus is in their petri dish and is killing the cells. They can't prove it.
So what happens then if you go onto the internet and you do a search for isolation and you come up with lots of results where SARS-CoV-2 has been isolated, etc.? What's going on there?
Well, we've looked at these papers, and so fortunately have people like Dr. Stefan Lenker and Dr. Tom Cowan and Dr. Andy Kaufman. In fact, Dr. Andy Kaufman did quite an expose on one of those papers, which had been published in the journal, scientific journal, Nature, which is supposed to be the most prestigious scientific journal in the world. And there was a paper published in Nature which purported to have done just that. It purported to have isolated the virus, COVID virus, and fully categorized it and met all of Koch's postulates and proved to have caused COVID. That's what it said in the abstract in the paper. So that sounded pretty conclusive. But like us, Dr. Andy Kaufman read through the full methodology of what they'd actually done. And when you read it, it's very tedious, but when you read through it, you realize that they haven't done any of those things at all. And when you get to the end of the paper, in that particular paper, they actually admit it. They admit that didn't actually meet all of Koch's postulates. They didn't fully isolate and categorize genetically the so-called virus, and they did not prove it was the sole cause of COVID. So completely fraudulent, really, because the abstract says one thing and the actual methodology says something entirely different. And this is true for all of the papers that claim to have isolated COVID and prove that it causes the disease. They all, because they all use the same faulty methodology. And it's only when you read through the papers that you realize it. And I mean, again, Dr. Tom Cowan did a great job with this, because he had at one time a team of 15 people working for him who were looking around the world for any paper, any scientific paper purporting to have isolated the virus, to see whether they actually had. And they spent a whole year, 15 people, so that's a lot of man hours, spending a whole year looking at these papers, and not one of them was actually scientifically correct. Not one. So it's unfortunate that, of course, not everyone knows that, and it fools the general public if they come across it. We used to get it all the time. People would write to us and say, oh, what about this paper? You know, they say they have actually isolated the virus. We don't get it so much now, because people have started to realize that it's just nonsense, you know. And but of course, it's taken many doctors in as well, because many doctors just read the abstract, like members of the public, if they come across the paper. And like this one that was published in Nature, it says that they've done all those things, because most people will not bother to read all through the methodology and realize that actually they haven't done that at all. And so it's, to me, I think it's deliberate fraud. And it's really disappointing that a paper, a fraudulent paper, let's call it what it is, a fraudulent paper like that was published in Nature magazine. You know, that's just shows, I think, the length that the officialdom are prepared to go to deceive the general public and doctors as well. And I think that's disgraceful. Absolutely. Well, it's criminal because of what they're doing on the basis of that, you know, locking the world down, you know, forcing people to have jabs which are injuring them or killing them, causing people to lose their jobs if they refuse to have the jabs. All of the mayhem that they've caused, I mean, is absolutely criminal, and it's still going on. So that's why we do what we do, and you do what you do, to try and bring this information to the general public in a way that they can understand, and either start to do a little more research of their own. Or, of course, they're always welcome to buy our book, and it's all laid out in that for them. So we've done the 10 years of research, so they don't have to, you know, basically. So, or come to our website, at least, and there's a lot of free information there that will help people at least start their journey of discovery to realise that they've not been told the truth about the medical establishment or what really makes you ill. And we do explain what really makes you ill as well.
Well, I'm going to ask you that in a second, okay. But I just want to say that two books that decisively challenged my paradigms were Bechamel pour Pasteur and Virus Mania, and those books, well, particularly the second, Virus Mania, it looks at a number of different virus outbreaks over the last 100 years, and it dissects each one using the data. And you come to realize that not a single viral outbreak required a virus.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we did actually, well, we do have a copy of Virus Mania, but the first edition, which I believe was published in something like 2007, well, the English version in 2007. I know they've updated it a couple of times, but I mean, you know, that was one of our sort of early research books, if you like, so that helped. And we do reference it in our own book as well. So, yes, I mean, you're quite right. That's quite an eye-opener with looking at the many alleged infectious diseases. And, you know, they did a great job of looking at them. So, you know, we looked at some of the similar diseases that they looked at. But we also decided to look at some of the others, you know, just to test to see if, you know, if there was such a thing as an infectious disease and maybe something that they hadn't covered. So, yes, but yes, I mean, it's a good book.
That's why we looked at things, obscure things like the Black Death, to see if that was an, as we were told at school, you know, by infected rat fleas, you know. And we found in all cases, there was never any scientific evidence to prove that a germ, either a bacterium or a virus, was the actual cause. And there were always lots more logical reasons as to why people were getting ill, and that we explain all that in our book. That's why it's so big.
But I mean, if you look at, say, for example, polio, that was massive, and as it turns out, the vaccine killed people, and as well as whatever people think polio was, it wasn't. You know, it was related to insecticide.
Correct.
Yes. Well, I mean, again, using the word polio is sort of slightly deceptive. I mean, there were a lot of cases of people who were paralyzed, you know, so if we're talking about cases of paralysis, that would certainly be related to neurotoxic pesticides, insecticides, started off with lead arsenate and then DDT. You know, they're neurotoxins. And so people being exposed to those nasty chemicals would certainly have been affected by it, and they're certainly capable of causing paralysis. So yes, you know, I mean, lead's known to be a really serious neurotoxin.
Because what we found when we investigated polio, and it is in our book, that it appeared to be a seasonal thing. You know, people seem to go down with the paralysis in the sort of summertime and autumn time, when it had its highest incidence, which they never quite understood until it was realised that it was what was being sprayed on the crops, as Dawn said, either to start with lead acetate. And then DDT. And once they stopped doing that, of course, the incidence of polio started to disappear. But already, of course, as the pharmaceutical companies always do, they immediately blame a virus and want to produce a vaccine. And Jonas Salk is probably the best known one for producing the polio vaccine. But it didn't cure anything. And in 1977, he had to announce publicly that his vaccine was responsible for the polio outbreaks in America. And then his vaccine was withdrawn. So this is the sort of thing we came across time and time again.
But also one of the things that they did, which is, you know, quite common, is that they changed the symptoms that they alleged were related to polio, and they reduced the paralysis, because it was originally mainly paralysis, and then it turned into something that was just sort of an infectious disease. But the other thing that they also did was that cases that would have previously been diagnosed as polio, they started creating a whole load of other labels. And that's why it's important to realise there are no separate diseases, because they created other labels for sets of symptoms that they would previously have called polio, but then they started calling them all sorts of other names. I mean, you know, they're now, and again, in India, so they're saying that polio's being reduced, but there is a similar rise in acute flaccid myelitis or those kinds of things, which is clinically indistinguishable from polio. In other words, they've just given it a different name, but to try and make out that, oh well, it's not polio, it's something else, you know, it's a new disease, it's a new condition, which it's not. It's, you know, as I say, they use, I mean, that's only one example. There are plenty of other examples of how they've relabeled the symptoms that they would have previously called polio and called it something else.
And that's an important point. I know Dawn made it earlier, but it's a really important point for people to take on board. So I'll repeat it, which is that there are not lots of different diseases. There are just different collections of symptoms. And the cause of those symptoms boil down into what we refer to as our four factors, which, you know, we can talk about when you're ready to talk about them. Would you like me to go through them now and say what those four factors are?
Almost. I just want to ask you quickly about this concept of disease. I was going to actually ask you about that. Would you mind explaining that?
Sorry, which bit?
Well, that there are no different diseases.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, it's because when the medical establishment talks about diseases, and as Dawn said, they stick. Someone comes in with certain symptoms, and they've been trained to hear what those symptoms are and then put a label on them. So, you know, if you come up in certain spots and rashes and blisters, say in the genital area, they'll say it's a sexually transmitted disease, probably herpes or something like that. If you've got some other symptoms, they'll say, oh, it's a viral infection and it's influenza or whatever. But the symptoms, when you look at the actual symptoms, there are not that many different symptoms. They're just different collections. And they will depend on what it is that's made the person ill. Quite often, it's they've come into contact with some toxic material. And it will also depend on that word that is bandied about a lot, the terrain. So everyone's terrain may be somewhat different. And all of that is just the general health of their body, depending on their lifestyle, what they eat and drink, what they put in and on their body, and the environment that they live in, will determine how healthy their terrain is. So one person being exposed to a particular toxic dose of something will react differently to another person being exposed to the same dose, depending on their general health. So that's why people may exhibit slightly different symptoms or very different symptoms, even though they've both been exposed to the same toxin. So disease, that's why we tend not to use the word disease, because everyone, as soon as you use that word, they automatically think it's something you've caught. You know, you've been infected with something. These are all the buzzwords, you know, infection, disease. So we talk about illness. People become ill to try and take away from these loaded words. So then we can explain, yes, people become ill, and they become ill for quite a limited range of reasons. Again, we're back to what the four factors are. And very often, toxicity is one of the major causes. That basically, people have been poisoned in some way, either through what they're eating, drinking, putting in or on the body, what the atmosphere is, you know. It can be chemtrails, it can be all sorts of things. It can be farmers spraying their fields with insecticides and pesticides, which drift across. You know, there's quite a lot of drift from these things, and people can, yes, EMFs, you know, one of them, which is an increasing problem. All of these things are what really make people ill, and we go into detail about these factors in our book, and we can talk about some of them this evening if you wish.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm getting there.
Because I didn't want your audience to feel shortchanged. Well, he's told us about all the problems, but he's not told us what to do about it.
No, I'm still trying to get through the narrative, or shall we say the talking points, just a little bit, because they are quite interesting. I just want to stay on that idea of disease for a moment, because you say a label isn't a good thing, but doesn't it help classify certain clusters of symptoms? Like, for example, chickenpox, we know, if I say chickenpox, we all know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
Well, yes and no, but again, it's still a label attached to a certain type of spot or rash, but calling it chickenpox makes it sound as if it's something specific when it isn't, because all skin eruptions are the body's efforts to detoxify. So by giving a particular label to one type, it's as if there is a specific condition. So that's why we try and say, well, there are no different diseases, and to keep away from the labels, we just say, well, skin eruptions, you know, and there are different types. You know, they may be sort of balls, they may be blisters, they may be pustules, they may be just, you know,
rashes. Small,
yeah, sort of all more serious. I mean, you know, we've seen the pictures of monkeypox, you know, that looks pretty nasty. But again, you know, it certainly looks like the body's kind of expelling stuff and sort of really pushing, trying to push stuff out through the skin. And that's really what it is. So saying, you know, that there is something that is specific, something that is distinct, that we can say, oh, that's chickenpox, is still missing the point that that's a skin eruption of some description,
and that it's a toxin that the body's trying to push out. The skin is the largest organ of the body, and will we sometimes be its first route for pushing out toxic material. And that, was Dawn has said, will come up as spots, rashes, boils, blisters. But doctors don't realize that, because they're not trained to realize that. So they stick a label on it, which might be chickenpox or measles or whatever, and that, and of course, blame a virus or maybe bacteria sometimes, but usually a virus. And that really leads them down the wrong track. You know, they don't realize that that person has been poisoned in some way, let's be blunt about it, and that the body's trying to get rid of that poison. And it's not a disease, it's not an infection. They've not been infected with something. So, but the doctor doesn't realize that. So they then want to give some pharmaceutical product to try and suppress what the body's trying to do. So the body's trying to get rid of the poison through the skin, and the doctor's trying to give them, the patient, something to repress that, to suppress it. And so there's a battle then goes on between a toxic pharmaceutical product and the toxins that's already in the person's body, and the doctors are really just adding more toxins for the body to deal with. And then it can end up going deeper into the body and becoming some other chronic condition.
Like cancer. Gets
another label, yes, like
well,
cancer.
Eventually
it can.
I mean, there are a whole range of other sort of chronic conditions that might occur before it gets to that stage, but yes.
And this is the... Again, one of the main messages we try to give to people is to understand how the body works, understand what health is, understand this misnomer of infectious diseases. There are no such thing, you know, and that's a big shock to people. But this is what our 10 years of research, and now other doctors have realized too. And then, of course, have to come out of the medical profession because that's completely contrary to what they were taught in medical school, that there are not infectious diseases. And for the most part, people have been poisoned in one way or another. I mean, even our water supplies, you know, toxic materials are put into it, whether it's chlorine or fluoride or both, and many other things which work their way into the water supply. So people are being poisoned every day, and then eventually the body gets overwhelmed and symptoms appear which then get labeled as a disease, and then they give them more toxic material by their doctor stroke pharmaceutical company, and then it becomes a vicious circle, and they can never get well from, you as we often say, you can't poison the body back to health. You have to clean out the toxins and stop putting any more in. It's a very simple thing. Health is very simple once you understand how the body works and what it is that makes it ill. And again, that's why our book is nearly 800 pages, because we explain those things so people can make a big change in the way they think and educate themselves into what true health is and how to stay well all of their lives, without recourse, particularly without recourse, to pharmaceutical products, which are invariably all toxic. They call them side effects, of course, but, you know, let's be honest, they're direct effects. If you didn't take the drug, it wouldn't be poisoning you. It's as simple as that.
So what really makes you ill?
Okay, I knew we'd get there eventually. Well, we
also have to go to, you know, what really makes you healthy.
Yeah. So what really makes you ill is, and the two are linked, of course, because, as I say, with all the diseases, illnesses that we studied over the 10 years, we realized that we could boil it down to four factors, which were always at the base. One or more of them was always responsible for why a person had got ill, or an animal for that matter, because we looked at animal illnesses too. And it was, in no particular order of importance, it was toxicity, which we've touched on a few times. So this is what you either put in or on your body purposely, you know, so it can be personal care products, or it can be the food you eat. If people eat a lot of processed food, there's the additives, colorings, preservatives, all of which are toxic in one way or another. So it's what you put in and on your body purposefully, or what you come into contact with in your workplace or in the environment, as we've said. It can be things that are very difficult to do anything about, what's sprayed in the air in the way of chemtrails or farmers spraying their fields. So there's all sorts of ways that you can come into contact with toxic material. So that's one factor. Lack of proper nutrition was another. This is, as you know, not the amount of food you eat, but whether it's nutritious or not, because a lot of people do live on convenience foods, processed foods, which are very low in nutrition. So because of the way the body works, it needs the antioxidants from fresh fruit and vegetables to be able to neutralize the free radicals that get produced when the body is under attack from, say, toxins. Because the body produces free radicals on a natural basis anyway, every day, but provided you're having a nutritious diet, they are neutralized and you wouldn't know anything about it, and the body works. Just having vigorous exercise, the body can produce more free radicals. And what free radicals are basically are ions, which is spelled I-O-N-S, ions, which are either molecules or atoms which have lost one or more of their electrons. So it becomes a positive charge. And it becomes then a scavenger, if you like, and will seek to replace that lost electron. And it can take it from healthy tissue. So unless you've got a good supply of antioxidants from your food, damage can occur to healthy tissue. And if left unchecked, can lead to more chronic conditions, as you mentioned, cancers. So it's keeping that balance, which and the body can do it perfectly well, but it has to have the nutritious food to start with. So people can get a double whammy, if you like, where they can be being exposed to chemical attack and not eating nutritious food because they're eating processed food from supermarkets. So they're getting more of these free radicals and not enough of the nutrients to eliminate them. And so it eventually becomes an illness. Okay, so that's two. So it's nutrition and toxicity. The third one would be EMFs, which you mentioned earlier, electromagnetic frequencies, which we are bombarded with, all electrical devices and cabling. Anything electrical produces electromagnetic frequencies. And so we're surrounded by them. And it's a case of trying to mitigate them. You can't eliminate them. So you have to mitigate them. So, you know, we all use cell phones or mobile phones, as some people call them. So we would recommend, you know, that people use them sensibly. Don't put them to your head. You know, you can use them hands-free. Don't put them under your pillow when you go to sleep at night. You know, in fact, don't even keep them in the bedroom. You know, switch off your Wi-Fi hubs if you can when you're not using it. It's all sorts of different ways of trying to minimize your exposure to EMFs. Because EMFs, again, will cause these free radicals and, you know, they can cause damage to the myelin sheaths, which coat the nerves. So you can exhibit all sorts of neurological problems, which can be caused by EMFs, even to the extent of brain tumours. And I think the rise in brain tumours is directly attributable to cell phones. Because very often the tumour is behind the ear of the one that people mostly put their phone to, and because it's in such close proximity. So that's why we recommend people use it hands-free, keep it as well away from the body. So EMFs, yeah, difficult, but just use sensible things. We do recommend that people don't have Bluetooth earphones. Because you're basically putting a radio transmitter in your head. So try and use wired earphones rather than, I know they're not as convenient, but I had to ditch mine. I had some very nice ones, but as an electrical engineer, I can measure the output from these things. And once I could see the amount of electrical radiation they were putting out, that was it. I knew that I couldn't use them anymore. And so, you know, you have to be sensible. So these are the recommendations we make. So EMFs, yeah, surrounded by them, but you can mitigate your exposure, and within reason, your body can repair the damage if you attend to these other factors as well. So that's three of the factors. And then the fourth one is prolonged emotional stress, because when people are in fear or stress and it's prolonged, you know, not just I'm a bit late for catching the train, you know, when you have a burst of adrenaline to get there. No, we're talking about prolonged emotional stress that again produces free radicals. And if they're not neutralized over a period of time, it's not only psychological damage that it can cause, but also physiological damage, you know. So these are the four factors, and we obviously explain them in detail in our book. And if you attend to those four factors, which you, people can do once they're aware of them, they can live a healthy life, as I say, without recourse to expensive pharmaceutical products, which won't actually cure them of anything and will actually cause more problems because they're all toxic, all of them. So that's why we say health is a simple thing once you know how the body works and you can address these simple factors and without spending lots of money or doing anything preposterous to keep yourself healthy.
The thing is that problems can't be solved unless you actually get to the root cause. And the whole medical establishment is not about finding a root cause. It's just managing symptoms, you know, because most so-called chronic conditions, we found just all of the ones that we looked into, the medical establishment does not know what the causes are. You know, they admit to not knowing, and therefore all they're doing is addressing symptoms. But that means that the person's condition can't be improved because you have to actually remove the cause. And that's why we sort of dug deep into the real causes. So once you address those causes, then your body won't display those symptoms because it will be functioning properly, because you aren't then exposing it to the causes, the factors that actually will make it ill. And I mean, the stress thing is really important, considering the last 2.5 years. You know, it's like over 2.5 years now. You know, I mean, that's been deliberate to keep people stressed out, psychologically damaged, if you like, confused, so they're not thinking clearly, not making good decisions. But it is damaging to the body, not just to the mind, you know, because the mind and body aren't separate. So, you know, they do function together. And if when you're in that level of fear constantly, it can be damaging. But also people can create the conditions in their body that they fear. You know, if people are fearful, you know, if they fear these so-called germs around them, and they think that these invisible agents are going to make them ill, then they can actually manifest those symptoms just out of that fear alone. You know, we know about the placebo and the nocebo effect, and it's not just a, you know, or, you know, that's not important. It is very important, and that's a particular factor that's going on at the moment. And that's why we're trying to help people understand that there is nothing to fear, because that takes one of those factors away. You know, there are no invisible germs out there that are going to make them ill, and there's no reason to stay away from everybody else. There's no reason to follow these measures, which are actually harmful. So again, that's another factor, but it's to help people understand there's nothing to fear. So that takes that factor away, and then they realise that they can address the other factors, because then they're capable of functioning properly and thinking, rather than just living in fear and not knowing what to do, and confusion. I mean, that's what this is about, really.
And they realise, of course, that once there's no germs to be afraid of, then they will ask the other more obvious question is, well, what do I need? What are these vaccinations? What are these jabs about? You know, there's nothing to protect me against, you know, I don't need them. And they're quite right, of course, they don't. And these latest jabs, the COVID ones, as I say, they can't even call them a vaccination. I mean, getting them onto the market was quite fraudulent. I mean, the vaccine manufacturers called them a vaccine to start with, because there are different federal laws governing how a vaccine is allowed to go onto the market. But as we now know, these jabs are more likely to be called gene therapy. Well, there's a different set of rules for something that can be classed as gene therapy. Mm. So they've really lied to the federal drug agencies and that they've to sneak into the market a trial jab, avoid calling it a vaccine, you know, which is quite illegal. And so it, for no other reason, it should have been taken off the market straight away when people realised it doesn't meet the criteria by their own laws in the countries where it's produced. It doesn't meet the criteria to be called a vaccine, and therefore they should take it off the market and say, well, until you've at least gone through the correct procedures for what it is, which is gene therapy, unless you've gone through the proper procedures, you can't put it on the market. But and it just shows how complicit the whole legal system, governmental system, pharmaceutical system is in this crime against humanity, because that's what it is. They've ridden roughshod over all the laws that were supposed to protect people. Even the jabs are admitted by Pfizer and others that it's all part of a drug trial, which in their own terms is not supposed to finish until the next couple of years, or at least the next year. So for the last 2.5 years, people have been unwittingly taking part in a drug trial, which under international law, they should have been informed about. Now, to my knowledge, no one is told before they're given a jab, do you realize you're taking part in a drug trial? And these are the symptoms that could occur when you take this jab. No one's told that. So again, they're all breaking the law. And this was even covered in the Nuremberg Code, wasn't it? You know, people are not are supposed to give knowing consent to taking medical intervention, being given all the facts. Well, people are not being given all the facts. They're not, as I say, they're not even told that they're actually taking part in a drug trial. So it's all of everything about this whole COVID crime is just that. It's a crime, and it's a very well organized crime by the people that are pulling the strings. I'm talking about the people that are pulling the government strings, because as we know, none of the governments of the world are operating independently. They're all being told what to do by these other bodies, people like the Club of Rome and the Committee of 300 and the Tavistock Institute, places like that, and the banks, of course, the international banks. So this whole thing has been controlled and contrived and planned for many years and put into operation to gain control of the world population. And that's what we're seeing.
Or depopulation.
Yes. Yes, it is quite sinister. And already, as we know, thousands of people have died because of this, and many more thousands, tens, well, millions worldwide, have been permanently damaged by these measures, both mentally and physically, and still it goes on. So this is why shows like yours and the things that we do are very important, to at least each time we talk, to be able to probably find some more people that weren't quite sure, and now they know, and have somewhere to go, somewhere they can get extra information that they can tell their friends, possibly persuade them not to have a jab. And this is what we try to do. And it's not always easy. We talk to lots of people who have tried to explain what we've been talking about this evening, have tried to explain it to friends and family, and have just met, well, violence in some cases, but certain resistance without checking the evidence out. They just think, well, that's craziness, you know, like we've had from some doctors. They're so stuck in the old way, they won't even look at the evidence. They'd just rather call you names or worse. So it can be an uphill struggle, and we get lots of reports of it breaking up family members, losing friends. This is a very common thing, but we have to do it because the world's health is at stake here, and that has to be got back under control with the people.
I'm just wondering, while you were talking now, you're going through the four vectors that cause illness, and I'm just thinking now that perhaps people, for the most part, intuitively know actually what creates good health. Let me give an example. All you have to do is be friends with people who live in the city, who live busy lives, and wait for them to say, you know, I just need to get away for a weekend. I want to turn off my phone, get into the mountains, lie in the sunshine, swim in the pool, and just get away from everything. That they know, people know that this intuitively is what creates better health.
Yes, I think you're right. But people don't trust themselves, you see, because this is, again, how people are educated, that, you know, people are told that, well, they're not an expert in their health, you know. They're trained from a very early age to put all their faith in the medical system, you know, that if you're, you know, the medical system knows how to look after you. And that's your first port of call if you're not feeling too good. And it's your first port of call for advice on how to stay well. And of course, they propagandize the people through the mainstream media, don't they? They're culprits in this as well. Without the mainstream media, they wouldn't have had the success that they've had in perpetrating this crime against humanity if the media was against them. If the media said, well, hold on a minute, let's at least have some alternative views on the mainstream stage for people like us or Dr. Andy Kaufman or Tom Cowan, let's hear what they've got to say so the public can make up their own minds. But none of that has happened anywhere in the world. And that should make people very suspicious as to why that has not happened. And they planned it that way. You know, in Event 201 in 2019, October 2019, they said that's exactly what they were going to do. They were going to control the narrative and they were going to stifle any dissenting voices. Mm. So they planned it. And that's what they've been doing.
The thing is, if they knew what they were doing was right, they wouldn't have to stifle the opposition, would they? They wouldn't have to stop people from being able to express, well, not even express dissenting views, even ask questions. I mean, you know, they just don't allow anyone to ask questions. I mean, some of the information when we were looking, you know, 100 years ago or whatever, they used to have public debates about these questions, you know, about the... you know, whether vaccinations were a good idea or not. You know, there were public, literally public debates. But of course, they know that that's not a good idea because people like us are actually able to show that, no, they're not a good idea, and to provide the evidence to support what we're saying, or at least to show that there is no evidence for their claim, because the burden of proof is obviously for on those who propose a theory. It's not for us to prove our theory, because we don't have a theory. We're merely saying, we're showing that the medical establishment theory that germs cause disease has not been proven. And they don't want the public to know that. So that's why they have to shut it down. But if they were confident in their view, they would allow, you know, public debates on that. But of course, David said it was deliberate to make sure they shut out anything and call anyone who doesn't follow the mainstream narrative a conspiracy theorist or similar kinds of names. Oh, anti-vaxxer, that's the other one. You know, just derogatory terms to make us look, to try and discredit us. Mm. But I think, you know, there are now people who are, more and more people who are listening to the kind of information that people like us are putting out, and, you know, like with your programs, people you've interviewed, and they're starting to realize that, you know, we aren't nutcases. You know, we have looked into this, and we actually know what we're talking about. You know, might not have all the answers, but we certainly have enough information to say this is a crime against humanity. Mm. There is no evidence for what they're saying, and to help people take back responsibility for themselves, their lives, their health, all of it. And of course, that's, they don't want that. They want to be in control of everything.
And so, everybody.
Well, yeah. You know, I really wish more people would read that book, Bécham pour Pasteur. I think you can even get it for free now. I mean, it's quite an old book.
Yes.
But it,
yes,
really,
we've got a copy.
It really did challenge me in many ways, because here you had Antoine Béchamp. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
And Anton, yeah. Anton Béchamp. Yeah.
But we need to sound fancy because he was French. Antoine.
Oh, well.
No, that sounds Antoine, Italian.
I think it should be Antoine, really. Yeah.
But anyway, we know who we mean.
Oh, we're going to bring in that French spin. But, I mean, he was already saying more than a century ago that germs originate from inside cells, while Louis Pasteur was saying, no, not really. And Louis Pasteur ended up getting all the funding. But the experiments that Béchamp was doing were actually experiments that anybody can do today and can see for themselves.
Yes, I mean, he was a true scientist, unlike Louis Pasteur, who was a chemist. And
but he had the right connections, as you say.
Yeah, he had the right connections. And, of course, with the growing power of the drug companies, of course, they latched onto that and could see lots of money to be made. So, and Béchamp was a very different person, a much more gentle, unassuming type of person. And so wasn't in the limelight. Although I take on board what you're saying about Béchamp's book, as Dawn said, we have a copy, we've studied his work. But in all fairness, it's not the easiest of reads. Mm-mm. And for everyone. So it could be a bit off-putting. And that's why, and I'm plugging our book, but that's why we've tried very hard to make our book very readable so that people can get all the information they need without having to have a degree in microbiology or something like that.
I've got your book, and it is very easy to read.
Yes.
Thank you. What does it say, a degree, but also a dictionary beside them?
Yes. We've tried to avoid all that and give the information that people need so it can be read by every man and woman, as it were. And I think we've been successful in that because we're told so by thousands of people that have bought the book, so that's good. So I think we can give ourselves a pat on the back that we've been successful in presenting the information in an easily understandable way that people can make practical use of and take back control of their health, which is really what we intended.
Do you think people were healthier 1,000 years ago?
Well, that's a bit difficult to answer, really, as we weren't around 1,000 years ago. But it's difficult to know, really, because we, like anyone, has come to realise that what the history books might tell us or lead us to believe is not necessarily true. And so we can be given a very false idea of how history was and how people lived. But certainly, I think, I mean, people have often said that, like during the Second World War, when much store was put on people, there was a saying in Britain of dig for victory, and people were encouraged to get their allotments and their gardens growing fresh fruit and vegetables, you know, and everyone tried to do it, no matter how small a garden they'd got, was to turn it over into growing food locally. And so people were having a better diet because they were eating fresh produce uncontaminated by anything from their own gardens. And they say that during that period that people's health actually improved during the war. That's not the people that were in the trenches or being shot at every day, but I'm just talking about the civilians at home, provided they weren't being bombed, that their health improved because they had much better diets because they were growing their own food locally.
Which also, if you're growing your own food, there is a minimal amount of time between when you're actually picking the food and when you eat it. So, you know, they were, you know, picking it and eating it the same day.
Fresh.
Whereas now there is a whole distribution system that means there could be weeks between something when something is picked and when you actually eat it. and often they're picked before they're even ripe, so that they ripen sort of during the storing period, even though it's sort of cold storage. But again, that's when fresh produce starts to lose its nutritional value. So again, you know, the when you're growing your own, or you know, you're actually sourcing your food locally, then it's going to be much fresher, and that again will have a higher nutritional intake input for you.
And again, what's why we also advise as much as possible to buy organic fruit and veg, because the plants will have been grown in healthier conditions, the soil will have been checked so that it's healthy, the soil is healthy, and that the plants are minimally, you know, we're not going to say it's 100% never sprayed with anything. It shouldn't be, but we know nothing is 100% perfect. But if you buy organic produce, then you're less likely to have had it sprayed with horrible chemicals, and that it will be grown in soil, which is a lot more healthy. And the soil is important because the plants need to uptake the minerals from the soil so that they can then transfer them to you when you eat them. If the soil is not healthy, the plant can't take up those minerals, and magnesium is one of them. So it's not going to be able to transfer those minerals to you when you eat them. So again, simple things. I know people will say, oh, well, organic food is more expensive. Well, yes, it very well can be, but it's what price health, you know. It's just little ways to advise people how they can improve their health by what they eat and drink. You know, water, you know, install a distiller or a reverse osmosis system in your house, one-off cost. At least then you can be sure that you're drinking pure water that's not got chlorine and fluoride and all of the other trace contaminants of heavy metals and pharmaceutical products, which find their way into the water supply and don't get filtered out at the main filtration plants. So it's these things that can make a big difference to how healthy a person is, and they're much less likely to have any sickness. All of these things can be brought under people's control once they know about it, and that's really what we try to do: inform people so they can make informed decisions.
I'm going to ask a question to both of you. Let's go with you first. I ask this to all my guests, but in front of you there's a crystal ball. What do you see?
Oh, that's an interesting question. What do I see? I see things changing for the better. I don't know how quickly, but you know, people learning to take back control over their lives and creating new ways of living. Lots of different ways of interacting with each other, sort of taking life and work, seeing work differently, seeing life differently, and moving it away from this system. That in a general sense.
All right, David.
I'm very optimistic too. That I've often said that I think this whole COVID thing is a great awakening for people, because we know from the people we talk to that it's woken, in the true sense, a lot of people up, because they know there's something very wrong, and then they've started to look into it, they've turned to people like us, and they realise that there's criminal activity on an international scale that's going on. So I think it is a great awakening, and it's a great awakening for humanity as a whole, and a great awakening in consciousness, which will bring people together. And it is doing, we know from the groups that we talk to all around the country, the UK, bringing groups together who are working together. So, and they want to change, not to Klaus Schwab's great reset. They want a reset, but a reset which gives power back to the people. And You know, we're great believers in consciousness, and this is a development in consciousness for humanity as a whole, where they're stepping up a notch in awareness, and will take better care of one another and the world that they live in, because, as we say to people, everything is connected. Everything is connected through consciousness, and that's what this is all about. It is this great awakening, and it is working. So I'm very optimistic that we'll call them the sort of dark energies that are perpetrating these crimes, will fade into the background. They will be, as people become awake on a massive scale worldwide, these dark powers will fade into the background, and it will be a much happier time. Again, like Dawn, I can't say, oh, it's going to be next month, but it is happening. It's been happening all over this last 2.5 years, and it's continuing to happen. And, you know, it will march onwards. And so I'm very optimistic for the future. I see it not dim and dark and getting worse, because there's lots of doomsday prophets I know out there. But I don't want people to be dragged down by them, because it gives them a negative attitude. And if, as we've said, the mind is very powerful, and if they're drawn into these doomsday prophecies and are thinking the worst all the time, you know, that's very detrimental to them. And it's unnecessary, because, as we often tell people, people are much more powerful than they realize. And once they start to recognize that power and grow into it and realize that they have hidden qualities that will come to fruition, and that again is part of what's happening now. So that's really moves more into our native reality work, but that's another story.
I think I might want to chat to you about that in a coming conversation. The nature of reality sounds fantastic.
The nature of reality, yes.
Okay. We know the book, but let's do all the promo stuff again. If I wanted to buy another copy of your book and follow your work, where can I go?
Okay. Well, I often say it's a one-stop shop, really. If people just go to our website, which is whatreallymakesyouill.com, so it's nice and easy, first part, they can find out lots about us, all free, lots of all the free interviews and articles and things like that. They can buy the audio book there. So we do an audio version. In fact, our website is the only place they can get an audio version.
Who reads it?
Sorry?
It's a text to speech software program. Yeah, it was the only way. You know, there's about, was it something like 350,000 words, so, you know, in the book. So, you know, bit of a task. So we went that route because it was just not viable for us to go any other route.
But there's a sample of the book in the readers. It's an English voice. That's quite pretty good. But there's a free sample of it that people can listen to and think, oh, that's okay. You know, that's good, or not, as the case may be. So they can make a choice then. But it does quite well. People can download it onto any of their devices. But they can only get it from our website. Whereas the book, there's lots of places you can get it, which includes Amazon, of course. All books end up on Amazon. But there are lots of online bookstores that do it. And I see that, I mean, you can get it from your bookshop. If you go to your bookshop and order it, if they've not got it in, they will get it for you. It's a proper book. It's got an ISBN number. And so they can order it if they wish through their local bookshop. But they can start by going to our website at whatreallymakesyouill.com and finding out more about our work. They can get a newsletter. There's a free newsletter that they can sign up for. So that gives them information periodically. And there's a members area which they can join, where there's more special things that are only available to members. So there's all sorts of choices there.
Mm. Dawn Lester. David Parker, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you very much for inviting us here.
Yes, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure. Don't go anywhere. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.